accession number 220-66 real one.
This is Edna Preston and it's real one. We're off, Edna. So if I could ask you first of all, could you tell me something about your family?
Well, I was born in 1922, which is many years ago, in Hackney in London, in the East End of London, really. Although my mother and father weren't Cockneys, or they were very nice, you know, very nice people. I grew up in Hackney. I went to school. I won a scholarship, and but my mother didn't want me to go to grammar school, because you only went to grammar school if you wanted to be a teacher or work in a bank. And my mother thought, no, that was a bit above us. So I went to what was called a central school. They were very good, those central schools, too. And I stayed there until I was 16 and a half. And I learnt shorthand and typing while I was there. Because if you went to a central school, you did commercial subjects. Mm. So I did shorthand and typing while I was there, you see.
How about your... tell me something about your father and mother.
Well, my father was very old, because he married my mother when he was about... My youngest brother, Colin, he was 60 when Colin was born, my father. And he used to beat my mother. It wasn't very happy. My father was very cruel sometimes to my mother, which we as children saw sometimes. But nevertheless, my mother made it a very happy... I've had a happy, very happy childhood. My dad used to sit... I remember on a Sunday, my father used to take himself off down the garden with his newspaper and buy himself a quarter of sweets and sit eating the sweets behind the newspaper so he wouldn't have to offer any to us, you see. But really and truly, I really did get on quite well with my dad, actually. Because I stood up to him. I wouldn't let him, you know, rule me on it. Although in the end, he went down and lived in Bournemouth with one of his daughters and his first marriage. And mother and I and my younger brother, Colin, got on very well together. My mother was a very hard worker. While I was at school, she had a hard job to keep us going. She used to work on the machine, sewing on the machine. Actually, she was very clever. She used to be able to do dressmaking by cutting out patterns, measuring people, cutting out the patterns in newspaper, and making dresses. She used to make bridal gowns and bridesmaids' dresses. And she worked for a little shop called Henry Spokes in Clapton. It was a sort of small store, really. And she used to make all the sheets and pillowcases and do all the alterations of the dresses. And I remember she used to get 1 and 6 pence for altering a dress. And when I went to school, I used to take the case with the dresses and things that she'd done the night before into Henry Spokes and leave them. And then call at the end of school and pick up another case with things in for my mother to do again. So I was sort of the in-between that used to... And that's how she earned her money to keep me at school. And I remember at 14, I decided I wanted to leave school. And I said to the head teacher, Miss Hole, who was a wonderful woman, I said, well, I want to leave. And she said, why do you want to leave? And I said, my poor mother's working hard on the sewing machine. And I feel if I could go out to work, I could earn some money. And so the headmistress said, what about all this secretarial work that you got? Oh, I said, I think it's more important if I could earn a bit of money for my mum. So she called my mother up to the school. And my mother said, what's this about you leaving? And I said, well, I want to go out to work. So she said, no, you must stop at school. We'll manage all right. So Miss Hole got me a grant of £1.08 a month. My mother was so thrilled with this. I think it was about... Now, that, in those days, was not a bad amount, you know, £1.08. I don't know why it was that odd amount, but it was. And that little bit helped my mother too. And I also got a job looking after an old lady across the road. I used to go in before school and carry coal up to her flat. And do a bit of shopping for her, and I used to get 3 and 6 pence a week for that, which helped my mother again. So I stayed on at school till I was 16 and a half, so that's how we managed. And also school uniform was a great thing, was a great thing. And the head teacher let me manage the school shop, where everybody, when they left school, sent in nice uniform jumpers and slips and everything, so that I was able to pick out blazers and things for myself without anybody else in the school knowing anything about it. I thought that was really wonderful thing to do for a head teacher. And I corresponded with Miss Hole for quite a long time after I left school. And when I got a job, if ever I wanted a shorthand typist, I used to go back to school, and Miss Hole would tell me if anybody there was good enough for me to take to work, you know, for me and work with me. I never forget that. That was wonderful. And my mother was a real lady. She really was. She was a real lady. And she lived till she was 88. And when she went, I remember the sister in the hospital saying, "We're very sorry to lose your mother. She was a lady." And I think that said a lot for her, really. She had an awful hard life. My father was Wyatt. My maiden name was Wyatt, and my father was Albion James Thomas Wyatt. That was his name. And I remember when I was quite a child, his elder two brothers came round one day and was saying to Dad, "Oh, we've managed to do our family tree. Would you like a copy of the family tree?" And my father said, "No, I don't want that. Well, why should I want that?" But anyway, Uncle Len said they traced it back to Sir Thomas Wyatt, which was strange because Sir Thomas Wyatt, my father, was Albion James Thomas Wyatt. And we thought that was quite strange, really. But they'd gone to villages and places, as far as I know, and tracing it back. And these two brothers had actually traced the family back. And I thought, what a shame that Dad didn't say that he wanted this copy of it. But what I understood also was that the son took... Now, my eldest brother's name is Reginald Albion, so he's taken the Albion. But I heard from somewhere that the eldest son always took the Thomas. But you see, my father had been married before and had 8 children, and his eldest son, Albion, I expect his name was Thomas, I don't know, because he was killed in the 1418 war at Ypres. Is it Ypres? He was killed there, and so he would have taken probably the name of Thomas. But we always thought, well, Thomas Wyatt, perhaps we do have something to do with it. And I know now that my eldest brother, Reg, is quite interested in trying to trace something himself. In fact, my niece, Joanna, said that when I go down to London again, she's going to take me to where they do all the... what is it called?
Is it the Mormon place?
No. She was going to take me to somewhere where they do all the... I can't think of the name of it.
Yes, I know what you mean.
To trace, yes. So Joanna wants to try and trace back.
Yes, cause
but when the girls see pictures, you know... there's a family likeness of a large nose that one of the Thomas, because there were a couple of Thomases, weren't there? Thomas Wyatt and but the one thing that always stuck in my mind, one of my uncles must have said that Sir Thomas Wyatt was killed on Tower Hill with Lady Jane Grey. Always sticks in my mind. So they must have mentioned that, those two, because where else would I have remembered it from? Because although I can't remember what I did last Wednesday, I can remember what I did many, many years ago.
Well, I'm pleased about that, Edna, because you're going to tell me all about your war. But as you were growing up, and you were obviously growing up in very difficult times, weren't you? This would have been, you know, the interwar period.
Yes.
With the recession.
Yes.
And a lot of unemployment about.
There was a lot of unemployment around us, and my father... was actually, I never really knew exactly what his trade was, but he was a builder and decorator. And he found he sort of got work in the winter time. In the summer time, he didn't get much work, but he was never really in a good job where he could give my mother sort of a really weekly wage. But do you know, we never seemed to go without anything. But I do remember going to school once. I had a hole in my shoe, and my mother put a piece of linoleum in my shoe. But instead of putting the dark side down, she put the flowered side down. So as I walked, everybody could see the flowers shining. So that we must have been... I don't think it dawned on us that we were short of anything. Now, I suppose in the neighbourhood that we lived, everybody was in the same boat. But it was hard. It was hard times, really.
Was there much sort of talk of the earlier war, you know, the 1418 war?
Only that my father used to go across to Ypres every year. They used to have celebrations, I believe, for when his son was killed out there. Dad, I don't think my father was in the war. I think he wasn't fit enough. I think he worked in medical things, but I don't really remember many people talking about the 1418 war. Not really. I don't think anybody in my, you know, I know my Uncle Bert, he was a soldier, because I've got a picture of his wedding, and he was in uniform, so he must have been in that war, mustn't he? So, but apart from that,
This situation which you know had started to go into, you left school at 16 and a half.
Yes.
What sort of opportunities were there for women then? Because this is the pre-war period, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, what were the sort of chances open to you?
Well, when I got a job through the school. I worked with the fruit brokers in Covent Garden. Mr. Palmer came into school and asked if there were anybody that, you know, shorthand typist that he could take from school. And Miss Hole suggested I went for an interview in school with Mr. Palmer, and he said I would be fine. So I started off in Covent Garden. Now, I had to get from Hackney to Covent Garden. 22 and six a week, with a half a crown rise, after 3 months, if I was found suitable. And it was sixpence, the fare was sixpence each way on the trolley bus. Sixpence, mind you, from my house right up to Southampton Row was sixpence. And my mother used to give me sixpence a day for my lunch. And I used to go into a little cafe, and I used to have a fish cake and a cup of milk or something like that. That was my lunch. A fish cake with special tomato sauce. It was very good in those days. So 1 and 6 months a day my mother had to give me out of my 22 and six a week. And I remember she bought me a very smart suit to start work in, because in those days, if you went up to the West End, you know, you had to wear a hat almost, and gloves and a handbag to go up to Oxford Street. Wouldn't dream of going like they do now in dirty old jeans and a t-shirt. Oh no, you had to. So to go to my first job, I had a very, very smart grey suit with a blouse, and I did feel very, my mother really got me up. You see, because she could make me anything. She made my coats and my dresses, and she used to go to the jumble sales at the church. They used to allow her in before the church jumble sale started, so that she could pick through the nice things that she needed, bring them home, unpick them, wash them, and remake them for our clothes. And we always had very nice clothes. So when I can't remember where she got my suit from, but I did have a very nice, and I felt very smart when I went to this job. And there, you see, I worked in James Street in Covent Garden, in Palmer Stockdale. And that was my first job. That's where I met Alec, because he worked in Moss Bros, which was across the way, and my office was just... And I remember Elsie Jarrett, who I worked with, saw these men all up on the first floor and said, oh, they look nice, trying to attract their attention. And I said, you don't do it like that. Get a sheet of stamps and wave it through the window. And that's exactly what we did. And it was Alec that saw it, you see. And he motioned for us to go down and meet him, which we did. We met him in the lunch hour. Of course, he went off to the war and I didn't see him at all until he came back after the war again. But that was my days in.
And you'd had this training in shorthand and typing. I expect secretarial work was very different in those days, was it, Edna?
Oh, yes, it was. It was shorthand. I did shorthand typing and bookkeeping, and I took the London Chamber of Commerce exams for that. And I got English with distinction, which I was quite proud of. And I got shorthand, and I got typing, and I got bookkeeping. The London Chamber of Commerce exams, I suppose, were like GCSEs now, weren't they? I don't know whether they still do them, you know. And it was through the London Chamber of Commerce. So that I was quite qualified. At 16 and a half, you know, I did 70 words a minute shorthand at 16 and a half. And I did Greg's shorthand. I didn't do Pittman's. I did Greg.
What is the difference between Greg and Pittman?
Well, Greg shorthand is made up of two signs, and Pittman's is all thick and thin and dots and bits. And ours was more flowing, very much more flowing. Our Greg shorthand, I remember going back to Miss Hole, if I needed anybody, for some time, and I remember going back to her years later, and she said, I haven't got one girl in school that I would let you have now. It had fallen away so much. It seemed, I think education was stronger somehow than in those days. I mean, 16 and a half, I was a qualified shorthand typist, actually fully qualified. And I went out and got a job as a... Mind you, for the first week I had to make the coffee, but then doesn't everybody have to do that? Make the coffee.
Well, I suppose your typing machines, these would have been the big ones.
Oh, a big Imperial. Oh, Imperial machines were beautiful machines. In fact, I had an Imperial typewriter until I came up here to live. Because I loved it. Because now my daughter is also a secretary, Jill, but of course it's all so different, isn't it? And she said, you hardly have to touch the keys now before they type, you know. But I doubt whether I could use a word processor. I don't know whether I could or not. But my old Imperial Museum was wonderful, really. It really was my typewriter.
So you were still in Covent Garden, were you, when the war started?
Yes, I'd left Palmer Stockdale and I'd gone to work for a Dutch firm, Kamstra's. And as the war got nearer, you see, the fruit importing business was falling off, absolutely. So imports of fruits and things. And one day I was told, well, there were two of us working in the office, a girl that did accountancy, but she could also type a bit. And Mr. Campshire said he was very sorry, but he'd have to, you know, put me off because there wasn't enough work there now.
And that was before the war started?
Yes. Well, I left, where did I leave? Yes, because then I went and worked for a jeweller's in Southampton Row, watchmakers and jewellers in Southampton Row as a secretary there. And I was there when the war started, in the jewellers.
Were you aware of what was happening in Europe before the war? You know, had you heard of Hitler and Mussolini?
Yes.
Yes, and Chamberlain going to
the beginning of the war, you know, we all thought it wasn't going to happen. And I remember I'd gone down to Brighton because I'd got relatives from my father's first family all lived at Brighton. I had them at Eastbourne and Brighton and Bournemouth. So I could get some good holidays from that, living with my sisters, who were more like aunties, really, than sisters. They were so grown up. And I remember being at Brighton, and I stood watching a man putting sticky tape on the traffic lights, putting crosses on the traffic lights. And I thought, what a strange thing to do. And this was just before we heard that there was going to be a war. But that's what he was doing, actually going around sticking crosses. And I remember standing in Brighton, looking up at this and thinking, what an odd thing. But of course, George, he was my nephew, although he was a couple of years older than me. Well, he said, of course, if we got bombs here, you know, he said that would, I suppose it would break the glass. So that's why they're sticking the crosses on the, sticking the, because when I got home, my mother was busily sticking crosses all over all our windows with bits of, it was funny because that didn't last long, did it? Those crosses on windows. Wasn't long before we dropped that. But then
how did you do it? How was it done? The crosses on the glass. What was used in those?
Oh, days? Sticky tape. Brown. It's not like, you know, like we get sellotape now. Well, we didn't have sellotape then. It was brown tape. But you could get it all widths. You could buy it on a reel, just like sellotape, really. And you had to lick that to stick it on. And it was just brown sticky paper, really, that you just stuck on the.
And was it purpose made for that, you know, for putting on windows?
Oh, no, no. Oh, no, it was used for sticking on parcels, you know, when you did your parcels up. And you know how you use sellotape now? If you're doing up a present for somebody with a bit of sellotape, well, then you would use this brown. I think I've still got a roll of it somewhere, actually.
Was there any other preparation? I mean, did you have gas masks?
Oh, yes, we were given gas masks. Oh, dear, when we were fitted out for those. And my brother got married at a church in Waterloo. And unfortunately, his wife's mother had just died, so they decided not to have a white wedding. They decided they would have suits. So they both had suits. And there we went, all to the wedding, with our gas masks round our necks. These little cardboard boxes on a bit of string round our necks. We all had to take them. And that stuck in my mind. But I don't ever remember taking mine out with me wherever I went. But I remember trying them on. And of course, we thought it was a big laugh. It was funny. We thought we looked so hideous in these rubber things.
And what were they like to wear, Edna?
Well, I suppose if you like, depended on it, you wouldn't mind wearing it. But I mean, they were very just sort of out of breath a bit, and they steamed up a bit as well. So I think we used to wipe something over this bit of plastic. I can't remember what it was to stop our breath, so that we could actually see through these things, you know.
How about shelters? You know, did you have a shelter?
Oh, first of all, we had an Anderson shelter. We moved houses, and we moved up to Dalston in London, and in the garden was a shelter, but it was been built into the garden, you know. It had all girders, very strong. We had a little door to go in at the front and a little door to go out at the back. Now, the funny thing was, I used to go down the shelter and sleep. Oh, yes, I slept. If I was going to be killed, I'd be killed. If my name was on a bomb, well, that was going to be it. I used to go to the cinema. I've been to the cinema with a boyfriend, and we've been the only two in the cinema. And they've said, all the time we've got people sitting in the auditorium, we've got to show the film. Oh, well, we said, we've come to see it, we must see it to the end. And I remember one evening we came out of the theatre, and I was with one of my boyfriends, and we came out of the cinema, and the bombs were just dropping, and you could hear, you felt a stick of them coming towards you, so you sort of laid, and Ron pushed me down into the middle of the road and gone on top of me, and the shop windows all came out, and I remember going home to his house, and this was amusing, and his father said, I must go home. And there was shrapnel falling everywhere. So his father gave me a cap to wear, a cloth cap, to save me from the shrapnel. And I thought, it wasn't until years later, it was a stupid thing to do. The shrapnel could have gone clean through the cloth cap, couldn't it?
So do you remember the actual day war broke out? Where you were and
We were all sitting at home. We were all sitting at home listening to the radio. We were all sitting at home, and I remember my mother had got all these bits of paper all over the windows, and but I can remember we were at home when war was declared, and we didn't know what to expect. Didn't really know what to expect. No. It's so strange while I'm talking about it. I'm actually there. It's very strange.
Yes, it seems very vivid, you know, the way you're describing things, Edna. Did you think, you know, that you might be involved in the war effort at this stage?
Well, I was 17, you see. And I don't think you got started to be called up until you were 18, I think. So I think I had a bit of leeway there for being called up.
Did you feel, though, that you might...
I felt that I probably might have to... I mean, my eldest brother, Reg, went into the Air Force. Colin was too young. Oh, my sister and I joined the local ARP. We used to go... I remember going out, learning how to use one of those, what were they called? Those syrup pumps. And we were the only two girls there, my sister and I. They were all men, all gone to this IRP centre to learn how to use the syrup pump. So you had to work it, so somebody was at one end and one was at the pump and the other one was... And at the end, they used to give you instructions, you know, 1, 2, 3, what you did, you started pumping them. And at the end of it, they said, stop and make up. And my sister got her lipstick out and started putting her lipstick on. And I remember the instructor looking at her and saying, that's not the sort of makeup I meant. We were supposed to fold the thing up, you know. And another thing, we had to jump out of a first floor window. There was the window, and they put conveniently put a mattress at the bottom, so that the warden, so that we wouldn't hurt ourselves. But none of the men would volunteer to do it. So the instructor said, now all you do is you sit on the windowsill, and then you sort of turn round and hang on with your fingers, and then you swing away and jump. And my sister and I just got out the window and sat, and we both did it, you know. Amazing. Of course, then the men had to do it then, didn't they? The men had to do it. But then we had to crawl through a smoke-filled room. And my sister had to hang around my neck, you see. I'm saving her life. And as we're crawling all around this smoke-filled room, we couldn't do it for laughing. We weren't supposed to laugh, but we thought it was really hilarious, you know. But we did all that, and my sister really carried on with that ARP work all the time. She used to go out with the bombs falling and everything, you know. And I remember she used to come out of the... If we heard an aeroplane going over, she used to come out and say, don't worry, it's one of ours. And then you hear, whee! Oh dear, so even though there was a war on, we could still find things to smile about, really, couldn't we? That was my... You see, because after that...
This would have been the phony war period, wouldn't it, when there wasn't much fighting?
No air raid. We got air raid, but nothing ever happened. And we thought, oh, it'll all fizzle out, you know, it won't last long. We learnt all to do all these wonderful tricks with the ARP, and we had our duties, and that was it. Because we waited to hear planes coming over, but, you know, we didn't, did we, at the beginning of the war? We didn't hear anything happening.
Do you remember things like Dunkirk? When the war really started,
yes,
for you.
Oh yes, I remember Dunkirk and all the little boats going out, and I remember because I belonged to a chapel in those days, a Methodist chapel, and I used to go to clubs. We had the Girl Guides and the Boy Scouts and the Mixed Club and everything else. And I remember all our lads were all of the age where they were all called up. And I remember them feeling quite sad, really, that these boys were young men all having to go out and join the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. They just all went off happily, you know, but I know later on one or two of them came back, one of them lost his arm and another one had lost a bit of his leg, and some of the pilots, boys that were pilots, had been killed, and that was all very sad. But of course by that time I was working in the jewellers, and the war came, and they, because our watchmakers were working on chronometers for the RAF, they got me out of it for a bit. I got an occupation, a special occupation that I wasn't called up.